As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This episode is presented by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner of The Athletic. Sign up at BetMGM.com using the promo code THEATHLETICPOD. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big Football Show, a podcast by The Athletic about Big Ten football. This week, we finally hit the playoffs. This is Scott Docterman, and I write mostly about Iowa. Today, I'm joined by our Mitten State expert, Nick Baumgartner, who analyzes and writes about Michigan, Michigan State, and the Detroit Lions here for us at The Athletic. So, Nick, how you doing, man? A lot of interesting topics for your part of the world, I would say.
A lot going on. Yeah, a lot going on, I would say, these days. But a good busy. Everyone seems to be, well, not the Lions. Well, I guess, the Lions did just win, Scott. So everyone is happy for the most part right now. So a rarity in our neck of the woods. We don't get many of those days. But yeah, busy enough, but can't complain too much.
Yeah, exactly. I think the last time we talked was in the press box at Indianapolis, and right before, you know, as the demolition was underway between Michigan and Iowa.
Right.
And we're discussing maybe Aiden Hutchinson looked good in Honolulu blue and silver.
He might,
And well, now that's
got to get
out of
back into that slot. Yeah, right. They're into two. Although I guess we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes down. Jared Goff is on the COVID list now, so we'll see if that doesn't derail things here as the NFL season comes crashing to an end, as it always does.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, though, who knows? As crazy as things can happen, maybe the Jaguars will hire Jim Harbaugh and he'll draft Aiden Hutchinson and Detroit will be left here going, what's going on?
Right, exactly. we'll see how it goes.
Crazier things can happen, right. And unfortunately are happening here. But now, the real reason we wanted to talk, even though I could talk, you know, Lions NFL draft all day and night, but I think, you're going to be heading to Miami for a pretty big freaking game. I mean, maybe as big for Michigan, you know, I would say since the 06 Ohio State game, just because that was kind of a de facto semifinal, and certainly since the 97 Rose Bowl, if you want to go have a qualifier. But this is one hell of a matchup. I mean, you know, Michigan, Georgia, SEC, Big Ten, power versus power. I mean, it's got all the elements that I really dig, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
And you really analyze this. But what was the kind of the first thing when you really started to dig into this that you noticed? And I'll definitely pump that you wrote one hell of an analysis on this piece yourself.
Yeah, I think that Georgia, the first thing that jumps off with Georgia is their defense and everything that they do from an athlete and speed, and just it's relentless. I mean, they're the most relentless unit I think anybody of anything I saw all year. I didn't see anything close to it. And the thing that somebody asked me actually yesterday on Twitter, how much should we take into account, you know, how good Georgia's numbers are defensively based on, you know, maybe they didn't play a lot of great teams, because you look at the numbers now this year, it's like maybe they didn't play a lot of great offenses. But my counter to that is that they just destructed and, like, dominated most every team they played in the SEC. And, you know, there were a few, like Auburn, they wore out and eventually, like, took care of. And there were teams that had athletes that could hang. But, I mean, they beat the tar out of everybody except Alabama. So that's what jumped off to me. Physically, Georgia is, you know, everything Ohio State was plus a little bit more, you know, and that, if you can believe that, I mean, that's kind of, and it's a lot like what you get when you play Alabama. Michigan has actually seen them in recent years. They saw them in the Citrus Bowl a couple years ago in one of those random years where Alabama wasn't in the playoff. But it's a lot like that in that you just have to be able to play this game at a toughness and a physical level that for a lot of teams, they're just not going to be able to get to. And Michigan, I think, fortunately for them, that's why they're here. So it's an interesting game. I actually think Michigan has probably more of a chance to swing in this thing longer than most might off the top of my head. But, I mean, Georgia's defense, I think, is that good. And I think that everybody not named Alabama has problems against Georgia's defense for a lot of the reasons that are pretty obvious. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, kind of the way you ended your first section was Michigan can beat good. It has to survive elite. Yeah. I think that's right on. with this scenario because, yeah, if the game we covered, it wasn't much of a game because Iowa giving up a couple big plays early, and then by mid to late third quarter, it was over. That's a different ball game altogether here. And I was really fascinated in how you described Kirby Smart's program, the inside out defense to offense. And of course, you're going to look right away at Jordan Davis,
yes,
defensive tackle. And then you look at the way Michigan has played and how it attacked Ohio State. You know, the layman, I haven't really analyzed it like you have. I would say that's probably not a recipe for success in this game. Kind of attacking the A gaps or inside. How do you think they can perform there? And is there a workaround? And is there a way that they can still run the football but just do it in a way where they'll have some success?
It's going to have to be. I think they're going to have to hit shots in the air to open things up and help themselves out. I think that they can be selective and be committed to it. And also, they're going to have to probably be more diverse with some of the, because sometimes there's times where Michigan goes through games where they'll pick a couple of run schemes and they'll just hammer them because it's like they find one or two that the other team can't do anything with, and they're just like, screw it, we're not going to do anything else. Let's just do this the rest of the way. So I think that the advantage they have over past years with this line is, like, I think this line can block all schemes. They can block inside, outside. They can hit any gap. They can attack anything you kind of want to do. So I think that you sort of need to find what works best for you. I think that Michigan's tight ends have gotten a lot better. I think if you want to try to get on the perimeter and get your receivers blocking, I think Michigan actually has enough speed and enough on its perimeter in terms of tenacity to maybe have a chance there to get to the edge and maybe get some cracks there. But really, I think it's going to come down to they're going to have to make throws. Like, McNamara is going to have to make enough throws into tight windows to back them off. They're going to bring a lot of pressure. They're going to do a lot of stuff to rattle him and to get him into making mistakes and turn the ball over. I mean, that's how they play. They want you to turn the thing over as many times as possible, screw up, get off schedule, punt, 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 and then eventually, you know, field position tips and they, you know, punch a couple in and you're behind and you can't do anything. So he's going to have to back them off. And I think, you know, convert some third downs, make some throws when he's getting hit, make some throws into really tough windows, throw to windows. I think that's what, you know, Bryce Young did such a good job of, throwing receivers open. Just being a really special player. I think McNamara is going to have to be the best player on the field. We talk so much, Scott, about the lines, and they're obviously super important. But the quarterback, I watched that Clemson game all the way back because I think, to me, physically, Clemson matched up with Georgia, you know, about as well as you could ask for. But the quarterback wasn't ready for it. And if he had been, that game might have been different. So, to me, I think this is a big one for McNamara as much as anything else.
Yeah, it is. That is, to me, you know, fascinating. He hit his all year long. He was good at hitting his shots, but, you know, he was kind of, you get thrown that game manager, but I think it's right on here,
right,
in a positive way, exactly, that he was able to take what was there and made big plays through the passing game, whether it was at Penn State to the tight end late in the, you know, midway through the fourth quarter or, you know, whatever. And, you know, really one thing I really liked that Michigan did, you know, in the game we covered was that instead of allowing itself to get thrown into this mud puddle with Iowa and play rock'em sock'em robots for four quarters, they attacked. And the pitch pass, the halfback pass, to me, set the tone. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're not going to get in this game because then it's a coin flip.
Right.
If we get into a game where it's our athletes, your athletes, we're winning. And I like that attack. Is that a Josh Gattis ad, or is that more of a Jim Harbaugh change in philosophy, or just at least – emphasized philosophy.
That's Gattis. I mean, that's Gattis and Sharon Moore and, you know, probably Mike Hart, too, and everybody else pushing, you know, Harbaugh forward. I think that would be my best way. Matt Weiss probably gets credit with that, too. And Harbaugh gets credit for that, too, for opening himself up, I think, some in that. But that's definitely, yeah, there's definitely been more of that in recent years. And I think, especially this year, too, even in the game against Michigan State that they lost, there was some of that where they came out and they did some things that we're not used to seeing, you know, a Harbaugh team do in those big moments like that. They took some chances, I think, on the road at Nebraska and at Wisconsin in some tight moments that I wondered, you know, are you going to get tight and pucker up here? So by the time in that championship game against Iowa, by the time we saw that, it really wasn't a surprise if you'd watched Michigan all year. But I think that it was sort of really indicative of how far they've come and the influence that this staff and Gattis especially has had. Because I think Gattis and Harbaugh, it's been a really fascinating kind of relationship. I think he's taught Harbaugh a lot about, you know, spread concepts, you know, playing faster, controlling tempo. But I think Harbaugh's also taught Gattis an awful lot about, like, the run game, how to cut a game plan properly, all those things. And it's been a really unique and kind of cool, you know, partnership that hasn't been perfect at all. But I mean, you know, I think they both have gotten a lot out of it from the other side. It's been interesting to watch.
Yeah, it looks like a much more mature offense than what we saw in the past. And to be able to win with a quarterback like Cade McNamara, who I'm not saying he's bad by any stretch or anything, but, you know, he's not a Heisman contender.
No.
You know, he's not a Trevor Lawrence out there or whatever, the quarterbacks that had come out of Ohio State for seemingly forever. But he's played well and played effectively, and I think that marriage really seems to have worked because, you know, they lost their big deep threat right off the bat with Ronnie Bell, you know. So how is this passing attack going to be able to compete against Georgia? You know, part just because of the pass rush, but also the back seven.
Yeah, because that's the real key, is that Georgia has safeties. And we talked about that when we were talking about Michigan-Iowa. Georgia has safeties that can really go. And, like, nobody in college football, except for Alabama and Clemson in some years, has safeties that are athletes like this, that can tackle like this, that can cover that much space, that are well-coached, like Lewis Cine, the kid from Massachusetts. I think Mike Singer still played high school ball with him. Really good player. They've got really disciplined athletes on the back end who all tackle, who can all play blocks well. And I think the bigger thing, though, for McNamara will be, you know, he's been really good this year at avoiding defensive line rush, like avoiding sacks from defensive linemen. N'Kobe Dean is a different deal. The linebacker who, you know, when I watch him, it's Devin Bush part two. You know, I mean, that's what I see when I watch him. Just a guy that just is very difficult to get your hands on as an offensive lineman because he can dip and kind of burst. He doesn't lose speed when he comes. He knows where he's going, and he's just electric with his ability to kind of chase. You know what I mean? Like, chase people down. And McNamara is a nimble enough athlete, but he's not going to outrun him. And I think that that's going to be a real test, is what is his plan in the pocket when it does break down. Because I think that, unlike any other game this year, Georgia's probably going to get to him more than anybody else has. Ohio State really didn't. Michigan's offensive line has done a great job against just about everybody all year. This one, I do wonder, because I think some leaks are going to get in, and it's going to be, how are you going to hold up when, you know, Dean's coming at you and there's really nowhere to go? That's going to be kind of the test. You can't make the critical error that costs you something that you can't get back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Can Michigan get into a game where maybe it's almost like what we expected initially, at least from an Iowa perspective, is get into a punt ball game where, you know, it's you're six, seven, eight possessions into the game, and it's maybe it's 3-0,
right.
And it's really just, you know, not a lot, you know, some three and outs and both ways. Is this an advantage for Michigan, a disadvantage, or is it a net neutral?
It might be a net neutral. I would actually think Harbaugh would prefer it to go that way, but I don't know that Kirby Smart would hate that either. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he's proven that he can win that way on pretty big stages before against really good teams with good athletes. So, like, I think he'd be here for any of it, but I think Smart's, they should probably want to make this an athlete game, I would think, because their athletes are better. I mean, they have more. They have guys all over the place. Georgia's biggest problem is the quarterback, but, I mean, they've got athletes everywhere who can go. If you're Michigan, yeah, I think you want to make this kind of a drag it out, rock 'em, sock 'em, robust, like we talk about. Like, you want to get into a fist fight, because I think they can fight with Georgia. I think they've got enough salt in their front seven defensively to muck it up and give Georgia's offensive line, which is also really, really good, give them frustrations and give them problems and give those quarterbacks who aren't great some issues. So I think that if you're Michigan, you want to just make sure you're not making the critical killer mistake that you can't overcome. Just stay in the fight for as long as you can stay in it and see what happens, you know, in the fourth quarter. I think that's what they really tried to do against Ohio State, and they ended up overwhelming them because Ohio State just couldn't kind of keep up. Georgia, I think, will keep up, but you still have to sort of approach it the same exact way.
Sure. I mean, and you look at the Ohio State defense was their Achilles heel.
Right, exactly.
It really was all year. They have a great athletes, but
just not the same. Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens when you have great athletes who consistently go to the NFL and you just keep churning them out.
At 20 years old. Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's hard to replace that. And I think on the other side, though, and I'm fascinated by this matchup, and you wrote a little bit about this, and that is when you look at the interior of Georgia's offensive line. I mean, you know, Michigan's got kind of work, or, you know, lunch pail guys in the inside, and of course, billionaires on the outside.
Yeah. No, that's job. A great way to put it.
But are they going to be able to withstand the inside runs from those?
And I don't know. And that's the greatest question. And this is where I think Georgia could actually, you know, every time I convince my, or I think to myself that Michigan's got a really good chance here, my counter goes back to, I think Georgia's, one of their great advantages in this game is I think they can just go back inside. And I do think, as much as Michigan has done with the gap and a half and everything else to kind of withstand, I'm not sure that they have the firepower in there to, in terms of depth, to sort of withstand. Because when Georgia gets going and wants to get downhill, it really, I mean, they've got the classic Kirby Smart, Nick Saban guards, the big, you know, trucks in there. There's no Ben Clevelands on this team, but they've got some of the really big guys. The center is a younger player who's really smart and can move. They're really tough, and they wear people out. The whole front does. I mean, that's what Georgia does. I looked at the my favorite game of theirs, I think, from an offensive line perspective, was when they played Auburn. Auburn started that game like a house of fire, just coming at him as hard as they could, right? Like hair on fire. And Georgia just kept kind of chipping at him. And you could see by the middle of the second quarter, it started to crack a little more. By the middle of the third quarter, it started to get worse. And by the fourth quarter, it was like, you know, everybody's heaving on one side and they're just running them over. So that, I think, when in doubt, Georgia has that. I think they'll be able to go back inside in this game and hammer a little bit. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not sure Michigan can hold. That's one where they're going to have to maybe come up with something, because they're still thin there in terms of personnel, I think, based on what they're going to see in this game, because Georgia's got an edge and they've got talent in there that, you know, for days. And I think that's a strong plus in their department.
Probably the one and only area I saw in the Big Ten championship game where I thought Iowa did a semi-nice job offensively was getting the ball to the tight end. And he's a good player, Sam Laporta. He'll be a draft pick in another year. But that said, Brock Bowers, even though he's a freshman, is incredible.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, 11 touchdowns, almost 800 yards. And, you know, he can play however you want him to play. I mean, at this level, he reminds me a lot of a guy you see a lot, TJ Hockenson, because he can, you know, at this level, he can block, hand in the dirt, he can catch, he can do it all, and he's doing it at a very young age. What that to me, he could be a difference maker.
Absolutely.
In my eyes.
Absolutely.
On third down, on, you know, even on first down. So what do you what do you think of this? How can Michigan defend him, especially if say it's play action, because that's where the tight end is really a powerful element.
Bowers and Darnell Washington, the 6'7", 260 kid, the giant sophomore. Mm-hmm. They're both super young. And there's another one in there too, 86, I forget his name. They're all good players. That's another one where those are the two things, I guess, overall, because Georgia's got the speed on the outside. Sometimes that works for them, sometimes it doesn't, depending on who the quarterback is. But Bowers and Washington, when they can get against the linebacker, even against, you know, even if it's zone against play action, they make those really tough catches, especially Bowers, in traffic that are physical, that you have to really kind of bring the wood or they'll run you over. Yeah, they're chain movers all the way. And Georgia just has that ability to grind through you no matter what. No matter how good you are defensively, they have NFL athletes at every single spot on the field. I mean, that's really what it is. Bowers, yeah, he's the best two-way tight end in the country, I think. I mean, he's a freshman. He's 19 years old. He's 6'4", 230. He can run. He can block. He knows how to block. He can get under people. Washington is even more physically impressive, I mean, in terms of the strength and power and everything else that he does. And that's, you know, they got backs who can play. All the receivers can go. It's just the weird part for Georgia is the only weakness that they have is quarterback, or the only uncertainty. Yeah. And it's almost remarkable that they've come this far with that as an uncertainty, because I think people look at this falsely as, well, you can get to the playoff with a uncertain. No, you can't, unless your team is full of 21 NFL starters everywhere else. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. So it's a really weird situation. But it is that one thing, like the thing of the Death Star, right, where you hit that one spot and maybe it blows up. For Georgia, it's the quarterback. You know, unfortunately for them, still, after all these years here, talking about that.
Yeah, they've... Yeah, and that is an Achilles heel for them, no question, because... And they run the problem, and Kirby Smart runs the problem, and Kirk Ferentz has the same issue sometimes, and that is... Even if you think you've got the guy, you always cater to the one who's there and put in the equity in the program. And I saw that with, they did that with Jake Fromm versus Justin Fields.
Yes, my God.
You know, and Fromm took us to the championship game. You got to think differently.
Fields is pretty good, though. Exactly.
I mean, he's a difference maker. Fromm is a nice guy. He's good player, maybe at the next level. It's just the difference. I mean, Ferentz is that way when it came to starting Parker Hesse over AJ Epineza. I mean, it was like,
right. Well, what are you doing here?
You know, you got a 5-star and you've got a guy who is a 4-year captain. I get it, but sometimes you just got to take that chance. And I mean, one thing with Georgia, they're like RBU. I mean,
oh my God, they're everywhere,
and the same this year. I mean, I think Zamir White and James Cook are just fantastic, but.
Cook is fun. Cook runs like he reminds me of Denard Robinson when he runs in the open field, like that upright, like forward lean, and he runs routes too. He's a fun. Yeah, they have athletes everywhere. I can't think of the other kid's name. The freshman receiver, is it Amani or Damani? I think I forget his name off the top.
McConkey?
He's really good too. McConkey, awesome. Lad McConkey, another good player. A lot of athletes. If only a quarterback could throw him the ball, consistently. Yeah.
Well, now that we've scared the daylights out of every Wolverines fan and thinking that I shouldn't even be going, how do they win? I mean, what gives them a path to victory in this game?
So I think the quarterback situation for Georgia is where you sort of enter this conversation. If you're Michigan, I think that Mike McDonald and everything they've done defensively this year really does kind of play into the blueprint that Alabama used, which if you go back and watch what Alabama did to Georgia, was they just really made sure to cloud all windows. And, if there was a situation where they thought they were getting one coverage, they gave them something else. You know, Saban's staff does such a great job of mixing those things up. But I think that more than anything, Saban's players do a great job of playing the call when it's called. Everybody plays what they're supposed to be called. There's so many examples of situational wins in that game where if you can force Georgia after a 15-play drive to go for 3 instead of 7, you could win the game. I mean, you're not going to win the game, and I think that that's how you have to approach this if you're Michigan. Hang in there offensively. Don't turn it over. Don't screw yourself over to a point where you can't recover. Knowing that if you can kind of pick your spot defensively, get a couple havoc plays from the billionaires on the edge, like we like to say, right, Hutchinson and Ojabo, and then maybe pounce on that, and there's a recipe. There's a blueprint there. Like, that's what I would say if you're going into this one. You're clearly an underdog in terms of depth and talent and everything else, but you're not an underdog at Aiden Hutchinson's spot and David Ojabo's spot. Those guys can go do all the things that we know they can do. So go make the quarterback's life a living hell. I think that's the best recipe for success. And you got to kind of play perfect everywhere else, but as we saw in the Ohio State game, it was kind of the same thing. When all the things that we talked about that really won that game for Michigan, to me, it really still comes down to Aiden Hutchinson beating double teams and Ojabo beating double teams and Stroud just not having time to do anything. And I think that if you can kind of do that and cause some friction, then, you know, you have a chance. And against a team like Georgia, a chance is really all you can hope for.
So is it going to be a complementary effort? I mean, yeah, Michigan has really good special teams, but also, no matter what, you're going to have to run the football because it's just not going to be – you can't have 65 yards rushing and win this game.
I think they got to stay dedicated to who they are and not do anything different. And there are there have been years where I would say that, no, you got to go do something different here and whatever. But in this game, I would say I would stay dedicated to who you are because I think who you are is your best chance to win, and I think it might be good enough, you know, in this case, because they're just a really – Michigan is a really talented scrapper, you know. Like, that's what they are. They're a scrappy, talented football team. And, you know, I think that if you go out there and play offense the way that you've been doing it all year and just come at them and let them know that that's what you're going to do and stay dedicated to it and not try to do something completely apart from what you've done all year – that's your best way to approach this thing, and that's the only way you're going to be able to get it done anyway. So I think that has to be the way Michigan plays this game. They take a lot of pride in being the full team, you know, the special teams, the punt team takes a lot of pride in everything they do. You know, Jake Moody won the Groza, and he, you know, gave credit to his snapper and the holder. All those guys take so much pride in everything they do. It is a true team, and I think for Michigan, that's probably the battle cry, is you win this game as a true team. That as a full unit, we're pretty good. And, you know, they're going to have to be even better to beat us. And I think that's the approach Harbaugh will take. And when he's had teams like this, Scott, over the years, they're tough outs. I would say that this is probably going to be a tough out. I would expect Michigan to be a tough out for Georgia or Alabama or whoever they draw going forward here.
They're probably the most together team I've seen at Michigan. Yeah, you know, I think certainly so. Under Harbaugh and and probably since Lloyd was there.
Yeah, since Lloyd, for sure.
Yeah, you know, just a tough, hard-nosed team that really, you could tell they really rally around each other as all the, and sometimes it's easy to almost roll your eyes at all those platitudes that teammates give you. Well, one for my offense. But they seem to mean it, and it's true. I mean, you know, Haskins doesn't have the year he has without that offensive line, which won the Joe Moore Award, which is a really big deal in my eyes.
Yeah, huge deal.
You know, and especially because they didn't have an All-American. Right. They didn't have a Tyler Linderbaum or anybody like that or you know, out there. So I think that was you know, a real credit to them and the way they play, and you know, you know, the offensive line coach Moore, I thought he did a really nice job this team, this unit, and you know, so is everybody healthy as far as you know? I mean, what's kind of the stages there?
I think so. I think that for the most part, I think the bigger concerns have been the COVID stuff, that everything stays good there, but I think overall they were okay. I think, you know, for the most part, going into the Iowa, more healthy going into that Iowa game and the Ohio State game than I can remember in recent years. So they play a lot of guys. That was their benefit this year. So I think they're actually doing okay there in terms of not having anybody that they wouldn't have expected. You know, Corum was able to get back and play something against Iowa, so that was good for him. And I know he was going to continue to rehab. So I think their hope there is that he's even in better health, you know, when they get back out there on New Year's Eve and play. So that's probably their hope here going forward.
You know, slipping over to the other team in Michigan, Michigan State, losing Kenneth Walker. I mean, I think we all expected it. It's unfortunate, though, in some way. For me, I think what happened there with him and Kenny Pickett both, it just signals the end of the traditional bowls.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
And importance. I mean, if you've got two guys that are among the five best players to me in the country opting out, it signals that, okay, we've officially entered where it's playoffs or bust for these schools. And what kind of vibe is going on in Michigan State and regarding this and just in general?
I'm curious at other places. I think Michigan State, Michigan went through the same thing in 2018 when they had draft picks set out the Peach Bowl. And I think people here in Michigan saw that. And I think some Michigan State fans were a little like, whoa, by it. But a lot of them, I think, were prepared for it more than they maybe would have been if they hadn't seen it from the other side. But I can remember when it first happened here with Michigan, people were like, what's this was supposed to be a big bowl. Like, what's going on here? I would wonder what it looks like at Pitt, though, you know, because, like, that's a big deal. A New Year's Six game at Pitt is a huge deal. And I would, and at Michigan State, too, and everywhere, really. It should be, anyway, and you would think. But if it's not going to be perceived that way by your best player, then what are we doing? And, yeah, I mean, like, that was kind of the thing that we were asking ourselves when we saw the Michigan players do that in 2018 in the Peach Bowl. It's like, well, I don't blame them. And what's the point here? This is a good football team that is in this bowl game that doesn't want to be here. And I can't blame them for not wanting to be here, you know? Like, and I think that that's what I saw that day. It was hard to watch, and I think we've seen a couple of cases of that going forward. It's hard to blame those teams for that, you know? And it's unfortunate, but, yeah, I think we've probably sadly reached the official end that everyone now understands it. But I think that we all know that the end of this happened years ago when we first started going away from all this, when we started changing the system and really started going into the national championship, determining, you know, the BCS and so on and so forth, like, people, you know, probably stopped lying to themselves. And, you know, maybe that was a step in the right direction, too.
Sure. I mean, you look at when it became the BCS championship, like in 98,
yeah, right.
It relegated everything else to consolation prizes, even
exactly.
The Rose Bowl. I mean, it wasn't like in 97. You know, 97, you have Michigan number one in one poll. You got Nebraska winning it in a different bowl game. And so once it got fused together, it rendered everything else as just consolation prizes. Mm-hmm. And then when you take that a step further in 2014 with the playoff, that became the ultimate goal, and everything else was second tier. And then
right.
I think combining all of that was maybe what we saw in a two-year period with Jalen Smith at Notre Dame blowing out his knee just horribly, and then Jake Butt in that Orange Bowl with Michigan and Florida State. And it's like, these games, what do you get out of it other
right.
than a card to go to Best Buy or you
right.
know some T-shirts
yeah.
and a
backpack.
Bag
yeah, right.
or whatever? It's just not the same.
No.
And so I think, like, when you look at Michigan State and Pitt, if it was a 12-team playoff, they're in it, and everybody's in it, and it's you're looking at it going, wow, this is a
great game,
especially if it's on campus.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. That's what I said when they drew it. I was like, this would have been an amazing playoff game. It would have been an Pat Narduzzi against Michigan State. Like, would have
exactly.
been. You know? I mean, there's so many things, and it wouldn't – and it's not the only one. There are other bowls that you can look at on the thing, and we talked about this, like – there's a bunch of them that would be Marcus Freeman coaching up,
yeah.
like all these things right now that could be happening. And hey, there's one thing that maybe your coach doesn't leave before a playoff game, right? So I don't know, but it's got to be better than this one way or the other. Yeah.
Right. And I do think that the opt-out part of it, anybody that complains about it, like Mike Leach, I'm like, look at all these coaches. You got Brian Kelly developing a Southern accent in the air from South Bend to Baton Rouge,
right.
going from family to family. you know, you got Lincoln Riley leaving to USC. And so if they're not valuing the bowls, then why are you asking your players who aren't paid to value them more? You know, Iowa had an opt-out running back, Tyler Goodson, that ran for 1,100 yards and 3 years.
Why would he play?
You know,
that
Iowa State.
Right.
You know, Iowa State with Breece Hall, and
right.
you know, because why blow your knee out? Why ruin any pro career for a game that's? I mean, the regular season right now is the season. This is like
it's
a glorified exhibition.
Yeah, what the conference championships have become. You know, if anything, maybe it's put more because I've seen that. I've seen players care more about their conference titles in recent years than they have. The bowls, certainly. I mean, it's put more of an emphasis on that on accident. I think not on purpose, but I can recall that when Michigan had those players like Devin Bush and Rashawn Gary set out that year, they were devastated after they lost to Ohio State, but they were like, I came back here to win the Big Ten, and we didn't, so I'm leaving. You know, like, and it's like, well, okay, you know, like, I guess I get it. So, yeah,
exactly.
I don't know. It's very different.
It's. I had that same conversation with fans here with about the Big Ten Championship a couple weeks ago that this is – you know, one of the very biggest games. And I said the only games that are bigger than the Big Ten Championship for a Big Ten team are the playoffs.
Playoffs, yeah, that's it.
It.
Yeah. And then Michigan, Ohio State would consider themselves. But, I mean, if you're not them, and it's, for them it's the same thing. It's one goes with the other. You beat them to have the chance to play in the other. And it's like, I don't know. It's a strange days that we're in weird ways. People used to complain that the conference titles didn't mean anything, and now it's like they mean more than the bowls. And I don't know.
Exactly. Well, because we had there were a small portion. It was not a large portion, but a small portion of fans here were like, well, we'd rather not go to Indianapolis because then we could go to the Rose Bowl. And I'm like, yeah, the Rose Bowl location is fantastic, right. No question. But it's not more important than this. No. It's not. No. And it used to be, you know, 30 years ago, yes.
And the standard has changed or whatever. So you're right. Like, it's not more important to the team, certainly. The team thinks that this is more important. And I think that that's usually right. What should be indicative of where the fans' head is at, too. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, because Big Ten title matters.
Yo, big time. Matters. Yeah, so the program.
Except for Ohio State.
Does. Yeah, right. They just take it for granted. Yeah, right.
They don't really care. But, but you know, 17 years for Michigan. It was 17 years for Iowa.
Big deal.
You know, to have that pelt on the wall, you live for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they don't win against Georgia.
Even if they lose by 100, it doesn't matter to those kids.
They're still the Big Ten champion. They beat Ohio State.
Might not matter to the fans, but if you can't understand why it won't matter to the kids, then what kind of a fan are you really, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, I know you're busy. This has been a great time to catch up. And
absolutely.
I know it'll be a fun week and an important week for Michigan and for college football, because I think it's better when Michigan is good and important. I think it's the same way when Texas or USC or the other blue bloods are in this kind of category.
I agree.
And to have Ohio State as the sole flagship of the Big Ten for a lot of years, to me, has been kind of...
Yeah, enough's enough.
It's not been the same league.
Right, no. That needs to stop, I agree. Something different. I wouldn't hate to see someone from the West one day come up and do something here, too, but we'll see. One thing at a time.
Yeah, I mean... You never know. Wisconsin or Iowa might have punched through one of those years and, you know, maybe end up in the playoff, in a 12-team playoff. I think that's something that we could talk about.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. Well, thanks again for joining the Big Football Show and have fun in Miami. And I'll wave to you from Orlando.
Absolutely. I'll wave to you as I fly over, Scott, as I'm going.
It happens all the time to me here in Iowa. So.
Yeah, right. Perfect.
Thanks so much.
You bet.